When you're all out of fine lines, it's That's So MLS, a North American soccer podcast with myself, Andrew Bates, and Nick Thornton.
Hello.
Which can be
Kitty's got claws at, this week.
Which can be located at www.thatsomls.com and on iTunes. Nick, there was big news today on Tuesday as we tape this. After a season of wondering, the Vancouver Whitecaps have released their words, manager Carl Robinson. What do you think about that?
It might say something about my general Whitecaps apathy right now in this at this point in the season to say the first thing I thought of is this the first time this season an MLS team has specifically stated that they've fired a coach? Which I know release is still everyone saying like, whoa, does that really mean? But MLS teams this season have not released anybody. They've mutually agreed to part ways. That's usually how someone gets fired. So I was kind of like, oh, that's different. He actually got fired.
Christ out of Orlando is the other one, but you're right. It hasn't happened very much.
No, it is not the preferred nomenclature. I mean, I think like most people who follow the Whitecaps, we can't exactly be surprised. The only real question, I think, is coming up around timing. The interesting thing to me is watching other people's reactions in moments like these, because for 2.5 years, all I've been hearing is cries of Robbo out. We find out that Robbo is out, and now everybody's going, but why? Right now? Why now? And it's like, well, look, you got what you wanted. What did you, like, did you think it's they were going to wait till Christmas? Like,
it's not so much why now, like, it's not so much that it's a critique of why now. It's that, like, all the other little things that had piled up over the course of the year.
Which is what everybody's criticism was anyway.
Yeah.
So
it's like, you know, if not like the win or sorry, the loss to Dallas, which we'll get into a little bit, had kind of a real funeral. The turn in that game, where Dallas scored their winning goal, was a real funerary moment. I think everybody could sense it.
Yeah.
But there had been a lot of other, you know, opportunities. There had been a lot of things that had gone missing. There was the 6-0 loss to Kansas City. There was the Voyagers Cup loss. There was the loss to Seattle. It's kind of like, you know, and all after all of those, it's like, I feel like the people that are critical or not are asking, like, how come all those times it was fine?
Well,
but now it's not fine anymore.
No, and I think it's one of those things where it really is hard as a fan to take a step back and look at the bigger picture where you go, yeah, would it have made more sense to do this mid-season? Probably not, because this is a team notorious for mid-season slump. So, and at the same time, you know, if half the fans were in charge and fired every coach every time they had a string of bad games, there'd be no coaches left. You do have to have opportunities for coaches to make adjustments and improve things. But I agree, it's death by a million cuts or death by a thousand fine lines, that it's all of these things that have added up. That getting a bad result at home against Seattle and Dallas were not the thing that decided Robbo would leave, but he was on thin ice before, and it really just did give them a chance. If these were two crucial games where the Whitecaps needed points, and tactically they weren't set up to do that, and it kind of slipped through their fingers. And granted, of course, it may just come down to the players on the field, but at some point you have to make a call about what to do moving forward. And I feel like if I was putting myself in the management shoes, I think that now is the perfect time. I think they've given Robbo plenty of chances. I think he deserved the chances for the most part. I think it's easy to forget about what a coach brings. It's easy to forget about what the Whitecaps looked like 5 years ago when he came in and how much they've improved. But the last two seasons obviously being disappointing. And I don't think a coach should get fired after one disappointing season. But after two, I think it's fair to start reevaluating.
Yeah, I think that's true. That's fair. And I mean, a lot of people will say, oh, well, he made it into the playoffs. But I still think it's like, there was this line from the Stuart Kerr, the goalkeeper coach, on Twitter. I don't know if it's still up, but I saw it at one point where he said that he was really proud of having spent that season, of turning in a great season last year and remaining competitive this year. To which I say, they were not. Like, the Whitecaps have not been competitive, depending on what your goal of being competitive is.
Yeah.
If your definition of competitive is competing or in contention for MLS Cup, the Whitecaps were nowhere near that position at any point in the year.
No. I mean, you could say the exact same thing about Colorado. Colorado can be competitive 8 times out of a year and can beat many, many good teams when it's their night. It's just very often not their night. I'll honestly say that I think that the most unnoticed thing about this whole thing has been the simultaneous release of Stuart Kerr and Martin Pert as well.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised more coaching staff didn't go, and I've been deeply unimpressed with them. That you know, overall club fitness has looked good, but tactically, players being sharp enough, getting to see their warm-ups before every game, I've made a real note of that. The Whitecaps warm-up is always very different than every other team and seems to be... Like, I know it's just warm-up and it's not meant to be an actual practice, ideally, by that point, but they just seem to be flat and uninspired. And they haven't gotten the performance out of the players they've needed. I don't think they've identified enough good players to bring in. I think they've been... The judgment hasn't been there. So I'm actually more optimistic about some new coaching staff coming in as much as I am about a new head coach.
Well, this is the thing. In addition to all the results, this idea, and you wonder how long this has been planned or not, but the suggestion a few weeks ago that Robinson's staff had not been renewed,
mm-hmm.
really was like, you know, he was a 10-man walking from that point, so I'm not so surprised.
I'm not either. I feel like that was a pretty clear indication of what the club expected, which is if they can turn this around, maybe we look at contracts, but if they can't, then they're gone. Yeah, the timing of it, I was a little surprised because at this point, I think everyone would say, like, look, is anyone really expecting them to make the playoffs? So why not just see the season out? On the other hand, I go, well, maybe this is the perfect time then. You've got 5 games. Why not throw everything in the kitchen sink at it to see if you can get something different? And is it Mark Dalrymple? Is that his first name? The academy coach?
Yeah.
You know, I went to watch his interview first to see, like, what his plans are. And it's just refreshing to hear, you know, he ran a training session with them today. He's got different ideas. He might deviate away from the counter-attacking game. And I know it's just a presser, but, like, look, at this point, as a fan, I'm just going, okay, so let's do something different. If we crash and burn and fail at something different, at least we will have tried it. But this same tired approach that we've seen for the last 2 seasons and expecting it to work out clearly hasn't worked, so let's try something different.
So it's Craig Dalrymple is the coach's name. Now, the thing is that I think is a key as well is coaching search. A lot of people think that maybe this had something to do with San Jose being in the hunt now if Mark Dos Santos is a target.
Oh, that's those are the names I'm confusing. I was like, I swear I read about a coach named Mark today.
Who is the former Impact manager who went to coach in NASL and then, or was it NASL? But he's now with LAFC as an assistant. Who is a possibility? You've got to think that with the assistants gone, this is the time for somebody to bring in a real regime change. And the Alphonso Davies money that they'll be getting from Bayern Munich is something that they could spend both on players, but also on a manager and their staff as well. And you want to think that because of how crucial the offseason is going to be from the in terms of player development, that you want that work to begin immediately after the window opens. You don't want to sort of, you don't, even if you, you don't want to have a manager come in December. You want to have the manager or in January, when some teams are already starting their preseason camps. You want to have that manager in November if you can.
Yeah.
To have their plans made before MLS Cup takes place and before the MLS window opens.
Yeah. So that was my question then, because that was the one thing I really wasn't sure about, because I saw lots of action on Twitter today where people are like, oh, we're going to assign DeSantos another second-rate coach, which, I mean, there's all kinds of people. People love to look at the agents of teams and think that, you know, come up with these conspiracy theories that are going to happen. And I'll give them credit, but a quarter of the time they turn out to be true. But three quarters of the time there's nothing in them. But so can the Davies money be spent on coaching? Is that part of a non-player? Does that count as something?
I still need to be... one of the things that I was really curious about was how much I was under the impression, and I've never had this like confirmed, but I was under the impression at one point that you can't, that they weren't able to just blow it all on payroll. That some of it had to be on like infrastructure upgrades.
I believe
upgrades.
It was,
and I don't know if
the phrasing was like sporting activities. But yeah, I believe there was a specific thing of, yeah, it would be, I think the number was something like 750,000 could be used for player salaries, but the rest of it was meant to be sporting activities, which is super vague. And for me, I go, okay, great. But like, we have a brand new training facility already. Like, unless we just get everything gold plated, what do we really spend it on? So I'd be curious to know, you would think that would include coaching staff, but it can't be any secret to Leonard Doozy and the rest of the ownership group that fans are really expecting a major investment in the club. And I can't imagine that they are not going to be more ambitious than Mark Dos Santos.
Well, it's a big, you know, people talk about, you know, what counts as ambition and what doesn't. Who, in the end, people talk about this panel of people who make the decisions on DPs. But you also hear people say that Robinson was in charge of player acquisition.
Yeah.
There's also, if you're looking to build a squad, the rumor that MLS is considering eliminating the third designated player spot. And the Whitecaps have certainly not been an advocate for a third designated player spot, given that they barely use any of their DP spots for anything special.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see how all of that shakes out. I don't know if it's just the optimist in me, but I really do feel like the Whitecaps are going to be ambitious in bringing in a more proven coach, perhaps, and willing to spend on it. At the same time, you know, Carl Robinson was the assistant coach and then promoted to head coach because they felt he was best for the job. And I would argue for the first two or three years, he was. He really did take the club to a different place. And because of that, he was rewarded.
Yep.
So not super surprising to see there.
If not necessarily the Whitecaps' best manager. Well, like, it feels so weird to say that he might be the best manager because it doesn't feel like the best. It doesn't feel like an area
not right
of
now.
Success.
No.
But if not the best, then certainly the most. Manager. He's the most Whitecaps manager there has ever been.
The first two seasons, I don't think we won more than five or six games in a season. So, you know, and then we had the Martin Rennie era and he who shall not be named came in and scored a bucket of goals and we did slightly better. But I think it's pretty hard to argue that there, in MLS times, there's no way Robinson's not the best coach. However, his time is up and has been up for some years. Like, I just think we need to be a little bit realistic or at least fair in our assessment of his time here. He did manage the Alphonso Davies situation very well. Not that he's
It's his
not...
crowning achievement for sure.
Yeah. And people, as much as criticism as he gets about developing young players, in the last year and a half, we've seen a massive number of players get signed from the academy. Now, of course, they're not playing full minutes. But when you look at the development of a player like David Norman Jr., you go, there's no reason why he couldn't stay at this club. Tybert has seen, I would argue, a ton of success under Robbo as well. And we're looking at a player that could potentially captain our team and stay for life. And the way he played it against Dallas on the weekend, I think it was a strong statement of what players who've come up through the system can achieve. So I think we need to be fair to Robbo. But at the same time, I think we need to be fair to ourselves and say, yeah, I think that this is the right call. For those thinking that the Whitecaps are just going to find the cheapest option, I think that that's maybe a little cynical. But we'll see. It's the Whitecaps. Anything can and will happen.
You've talked about supporter apathy. And you know, I hear that for people who say that they find it hard to invest their full hopes into this situation. I've also heard it be noted that this comes during the Whitecaps' season ticket drive.
Yeah. Mine auto-renewed, by the way. Anybody following the drama of will he or won't he re-sign with the Whitecaps? Nick got auto-renewed, so I'll be back next season.
Well, I mean, there's something to say for that. But I think that, like, the issue... Players have been brought along. Davies is the key example, but I mean, like, Tybert had a career dip for a season or two and was not that well featured at the beginning of the year, but has really come into his own and to have a upswing. Sometimes in the league, you don't get that chance in this league.
Nope.
That if you start declining. The development's not there, or the trust is not there, and you end up in the USL, and you may never find yourself back on the upswing. But he definitely is; he's definitely there. And there's like former eras of the team are defined by this sort of player resentment. And his signature achievement, like other than Davies, his strongest quality and aspect is that the Whitecaps under Carl Robinson has been an amazing place to play.
Yeah.
The group, you always hear about how there's so much camaraderie in the group. You always hear about how people feel like they can fight and play for each other, and that's good. That hasn't always resulted in results.
No, I think he's built a very good club culture, and that's one thing that I really do hope does stay, because the players that haven't adapted to that have been quickly moved aside, and I feel like those have been the right calls. I also think it's easy from the outside looking in to cast a judgment, because ultimately you're just going to look at results and, you know, where you are in the table or where you are in the playoffs or not. But to see so many players support him, apparently Kendall Waston was pissed. Nowinski and Levi's as well, not wanting to say too much about it.
Waston told Harjit Johal at Hard Journalist on Twitter, I believe, that he's the player who brought me in, so he's not pleased.
No, and Tim Parker also today tweeted that he had nothing but respect for Carl Robinson, and considering how things went down with Parker, you might think there'd be some bad blood there, and it didn't smack of something. He didn't need to say anything. I don't think anybody asked him, but there's clearly a genuine relationship there. Robbo had mentioned that they stay in touch, so, you know, his players have a lot of respect for him. But, you know, we're in the situation we're in. I don't think anybody can really act too surprised or think this is not the right move moving forward.
Here's the vinegar to go with that great camaraderie, honey, is that as happy as everybody has been, you don't want to see people miserable because of the pressure, but people have come along to degrees, especially young players, that they didn't in previous eras. I'm thinking of Darren Maddux.
Yeah.
You know, he had more, like, you know, I don't know how you decide to rate his potential depending on how he ended up. But I think there was an era of the team where a lot was being put on his shoulders and he wasn't able to deliver and everybody was really frustrated with him and he got frustrated in response.
Yeah.
And this hasn't been that era, but I feel like for the fan, like, without knowing what the deal is with player acquisition, who's responsible for whether or not there is, you know, big name DPs or whatever else, that the lack of utilization of those DP spots has been crazy the way that it's begun, and who's responsible for that, I don't know. You gotta look at in terms of players, in terms of fight, in terms of development, and in terms of the fans and the energy around the team. So much has been just enough. Like I'm not even saying good enough because they haven't been good enough, but it's like, you know.
And I think that's the root of the apathy for most fans, really, is it's like, it's not so bad that you can even just be like, all right, we need to clear decks and change things completely. But it hasn't.
They were way worse 2 seasons ago.
Yeah. But as you said, just good enough or just enough is probably an apt way of putting it, which is maybe a way to transition into the actual game, which we can talk a little bit about against Dallas on the weekend. I actually didn't go. Most of that was because I was exhausted, and the atmosphere at Whitecaps games recently has been a little hostile, and which I think is fine, but I don't feel super comfortable in it. And, I had one of those moments where I was like, well, I have my TSN subscription. I could just sit at home and watch this and enjoy it. And I also, I'm not going to say that I prophesized a loss, but I didn't have high hopes for the game. And I thought, I'd rather just be at home. And if we lose, I can just go for a walk or grab some food quickly and not do this sad, long walk back across the Canby Bridge. But I was... just before the game, I was looking at the lineup and noted that Breccia, Felipe, and Juarez were all on the bench yet again. Or Breccia wasn't, because he had another child. Congratulations, Breccia. But I mistakenly thought he was on the bench. And so I just did a quick lookup of what the salaries were of those three players. And it was over $1.5 million between the three players in salary that have not, at least for Felipe and Juarez, who are each making... about $500,000 and or just over $500,000 each, haven't played a minute in the last 4 or 5 games or more. And so it's not that the Whitecaps aren't spending money, and you can argue they're not spending enough, but when you look at Seattle and you look at Dallas and what they're spending on players, it's fairly comparable. And yes, they've spent considerably more on those DP spots, but the Whitecaps philosophy has been to spread around that money. But we've brought players in, we're spending a lot of money on them, and they haven't either found a way into the system or performed at their levels or been best utilized. But to me, it's shocking to have that level of talent and that level of paycheck sitting on the bench. I also don't think I would have changed anything, but this is where I still think it's, we can talk about the amount of money, but it's also how it's spent and the type of player that's coming in. And I think Felipe was really the only good buy out of those. But looking at it, we play a completely different type of football, and we're playing him in a holding mid position that he did play in New York to some degree, but he's really playing as more of a playmaker. So, you know, and at the same time, Tybert stepped up and has been offering just as good, if not better, delivery from the same area. So you have to make practical calls. Does Felipe get the minutes just because he gets paid more and is technically a better player? If Tybert's playing better than them, I say no.
The I think you make a great point. And this is, if it's going to be DP or not DP, if you, I don't know, when you say that, when it's being said on Twitter that he was responsible for player acquisition, if it's the sort of non-DP player, then this is absolutely something that you can sort of look at. Both of those players, maybe Juarez a little bit more than Felipe because of the red cards, you could really argue did play themselves out of position. They were given every opportunity to succeed, although we've been critical all season of playing the two of them together, that perhaps if they did not have to play with each other, they may have found more success.
Yeah.
But they were given time and opportunity.
Absolutely. However, I think, you know, part of the success of the Gasol-Tybert combination is that it's very similar to the Tybert-Laba combination or the Laba-Kofi combination. Is you have a player who can run and nip at people's heels, and then you've got a player who can slide in for strong tackles. And, you know, I thought Gasol and Tybert played as good as they have all season. So it's so disappointing that overall the team didn't quite play well. I thought a few players were really playing out of position, but the heart and the execution in midfield from those two was spot on, and I really don't think can be faulted for much in the loss in either game. So
no,
it is frustrating when you look at it too, and you go like, I also think Marinovic has been actually really outstanding, but the end results don't show it because he's been let down so many times. And at a certain point as a goalkeeper, there's only so much you can do if people aren't marking on set plays. He can be a little bit quiet at times and maybe not setting people up the way he should be, but I really think Marinovic deserves more credit for the way that he's played.
Talking about the defense, and this is the other point I wanted to make about player acquisition, is I'm not anti-Donnell Henry, but I think he's had some shaky weeks that it might be time to thinking about some alternatives. And the Whitecaps have these two players that they signed, Roberto Dominguez and Marvin Emnes, who have gotten nowhere near the team. I haven't seen them on the bench. Dominguez is signing autographs on the concourse.
Yeah.
And they haven't, like I'm very interested as we look at the if we're able to learn as time goes on what happened in the team over the last few months, why we signed these two players, one of whom was playing in a position we definitely had needs in, and not even had them on the bench. I assume they're in practice, but they're nowhere near the first team.
I think the question
might be because
I think the question with Dominguez was match fitness, that he was still a few weeks away when we signed him, and he's only been here for a few weeks. For Imnes, when he came in, I made the comparison to Igibor because I felt like it's a signing that technically gives you something to see you across the finish line, but is a very like tentative contract where you can expect that these two guys could easily be out as soon as November because there's just not a spot for them.
They're both also international players, and I wonder if Dominguez is listed as a reserve on the MLS's roster page. So I wonder if that has something to do with it too.
Well, and I think for Imnes, it was also a case of wanting some immediate coverage for the departure of Ebini, who never really fully lived up to what was expected. It's really difficult because there's so many different things at play in terms of your style of play and where you're bringing players in from. And some players from some leagues come in and settle right away, and others seem to really, really struggle. And so you can sign a high pedigree player like Imnes, but ultimately, if he doesn't slot into the system, unless he isn't used to counter-attacking play and the pace and physicality of MLS, it may not amount to much. And that's where I feel like some of these signings have been a little lacking is, okay, they're a good player and okay, they've looked good in their leagues, but, why bother spending the money and the time and, you know, the potential damage to a player like Blondell, who has just fallen off a cliff. There's been almost no mention of him. Now, his performances haven't been that strong. I'm not saying he should be started over Kamara or Hurtado. It's just like, why did you bring this kid in if he's not going to get the opportunity? Because he was an expensive acquisition. And
yeah, no doubt.
You know, some part of me can't help but feel a bit of empathy towards the player who thought they were going to get more chances and end up seeing themselves sidelined.
The in the game itself, I mentioned that it had the weird funerary quality because Dallas had come out to score off of a set piece. The striker Urruti did not have jumped up, and the defenders didn't track his run, and were sort of looking at the ball coming in. Then you have this goal to equalize, and I think this is what's so crucial about this, because everybody's saying that a loss will really doom the Whitecaps in terms of being able to compete in the playoffs or compete for a playoff place. And so everybody has this worry, and then Alphonso Davies has this great play, I think, where he breaks past two people on his own, and then he feeds the ball in for Kamara, who it seems has been trying to hit this same header a lot without success over the last few weeks and is able to just kill it dead with just the right amount of power when it's lifted to him to equalize and sort of reawaken this dream of getting to a place. If the Whitecaps would have taken it, they would have been a point off of Seattle for that sixth spot. But they, as the match goes on, I have the result. I have the second goal. I think it's Urrutia again. Very late, like 86th minute or something similar, is, you know, it cuts off the Whitecaps in their comeback, and you see Robinson sit down in his chair, and it's like, that's it. We're done.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, although the goal came in the 87th minute, it really just did feel like there wasn't anything that was going to happen to change the outcome at that point. No, it was Mosquera and Hedges who scored, but Urruti was involved in both goals, I believe.
Right.
But, again...
Right, Urruti had the corner kick in the first...
Two errors. It's frustrating, but the positives, I thought Brett Levi's had a much better game, and I'm glad he got a start again. You don't want to destroy a young player's confidence by, after one bad game, you sideline them. I thought Nerwinski looked like an absolute beast. The execution from both wasn't great, but it was good to see Levi's getting in and around the box again. He was being very aggressive in his play, both getting forward and getting back. So Kamara, again, trying to carry the team on his back, and Robbo just shouting at him to go stand between the two center backs. And indeed, when he finally did go do that, he got his goal. But I get it. It's frustrating for players that aren't getting the service. And Kamara is a player that wants to get involved in the play. But how many strikers have we now seen get thrown under the bus because they have to come back so deep just to try to get involved in the play and to defend because they're not getting the service they need? And I've been up there when that's happening, and it is deeply frustrating. And at a certain point, you just go, all right, screw it. I'm going back and running and playing in midfield so that I can at least touch the ball.
Yeah. The quote at the end, Robinson says, you know, the buck stops here. The team lost because of me. And that is the complete opposite to this fine line style response that we've seen all season.
He knew.
The province, I'm seeing a story from the province here that reported that basically in July, when the assistants are not being given their extension, he's saying, if they go, I go. There's apparently a huge quote from this piece by J.J. Adams. The simmering resentment exploded in a heated locker room confrontation between team executives and the coaching staff after the 5-2 loss to Toronto. And the office had planned to make an official announcement once the team is mathematically eliminated.
I find that somewhat hard to... Why are the team executives in the locker room? I find that hard to believe.
Well, that might be a part of the ongoing...
Possibly.
Sibbering.
I don't know. I think that these things are very fun to speculate on, but sometimes I also remember that, like, sports are really just a soap opera, and if there's not a really meaty story there, someone will make one up. But I mean, it's not without the realm of possibility. But
the one memory, we were talking about Martin Purdy earlier, or the coaches earlier, and I didn't have the opportunity to share my favorite Martin Purdy story of the year, which was in the preseason when he got sent off against the Las Vegas Lights.
Yeah,
in that crazy. When he got in a shoving match with the LA Lights coach, and the Lights coach got sent off and went and sat and smoked in the supporter section.
I think that was our best game of the season, to be honest.
We peaked.
I also love that Daigo Kobayashi and Omar Salgado play for Las Vegas Lights. we got to talk about other games, though. There's so much that happened.
It's true. Well, I mean, hey, this is the big...
It's true.
This is the big deal. Now, the other lessons learned, I would say that the Whitecaps weren't the only team that kind of had their dream come to an end this week. When we talked last, mm-hmm. we were watching mid Campeones Cup, which was this Super Cup style competition between Tigres, the Mexican champions, and TFC. And I had said that it seemed like the if you could travel back and, like, you know, if you learned your lesson and you could time travel back and fix everything, you would tell them not to completely focus on this competition over the league. But indeed, Tigres blew them out 3-1 in a game that had nothing special going on. Sebastian Giovinco.
Vanny just can't help himself, can he?
Now, the one thing that I understand with this is that there is pretend, like, you know, I saw some questions, like, you know, I guess they can't treat it like a friendly because this is their opportunity to make some money off of this stuff that CONCACAF got to make money off of early in the year. And they're you know, what's the point of having this if the teams don't take it seriously? So I get it. But like if maybe it would be an untenable situation for them to do that. But Giovinco is taken off with a cramp in the 40th minute and then doesn't show up on the weekend. I mean, there's no better way to say, you know, lesson not learned than that.
That just sums up their season as a whole. Real simple. Yeah. To me, it was really silly. I mean, we did talk about, hey, this could be the motivating thing that gets them going if they get a result. But, like, they were never going to win this game. There was never a chance that they were going to win this game. So it's complete ludicrousity that they put so much into this game. And I get the thing of wanting to fill some seats. From what I've heard, attendance was quite low and nobody seemed to really care. I think a large part of that had to do with Toronto's form and just
14,823 in a stadium that holds north of 20.
Yeah, so not terrible. Some people turned up. I still think that there's this misconception that Liga MX teams have a big draw in North America when very few people north of Mexico really pay that much attention to Liga MX. Or,
now, that's not necessarily true. Maybe not in Canada, but there have been, like, you know...
American teams in the southern states and nearby California, absolutely. But...
The most of all soccer teams... Now, I don't know about Liga MX, but I just remember hearing this at some point, that the most popular soccer team in America is the Mexico national team.
Yes, the Mexican national team, which is not Tigres.
Right, but I mean, I think that I mean the unfortunate, you know, you've got to base it on results if it's not going to be a friendly. So the Canada thing is a bit of a hit to it, but I think that league is undercovered in North America. So let's not rush to say that it's not important north of Mexico, but maybe to the local market, it wasn't important. It also didn't seem that important because TFC had beat them earlier. So there was no rush to go and you know, right or wrong. And it was just, you know, because it ended how every other or almost every other MLS League MX match had gone prior to this year, it didn't matter. It was like, oh, we lost again. A Mexican team held an MLS team for 60 minutes and then beat the stuffing out of them.
Yeah, the time will come, but it is not anytime soon, and it certainly wasn't going to be that game.
It came earlier this year, but to mistake that moment as enduring trend is concerning.
Yeah, and knowing that they're basically all but out of contention now, a team that got some very positive results that really did a lot for themselves this week was Philadelphia. Uh-huh.
Do we want to talk about the TFC New York game a little bit first?
Oh, how come I'm missing that one? Oh, yeah.
Yeah, we talked about the Campeones Cup.
Oh, right, yes. New York Red Bulls.
The payback was a away loss 2-0 to New York. I have in my notes, no Gio, no lesson. Bono Bono did his best the first half to get a couple of key saves, but eventually the Bono and the defense ultimately betrayed themselves. Vasquez almost scored with his thigh against himself. And then for the second time, unfortunately, in a week, Eric Zavaleta totally biffs it to let a non-game-winning goal, or to let sort of like a just a punctuation goal, in that he literally is trying to backtrack and he falls on his own ass.
Sums up so much about their season.
So yeah, there's that. That has the repercussions that now TFC are
10 points.
10 points adrift, two teams between them. Rough position. New York Red Bulls are now four behind Atlanta in the race for the Supporters' Shield with the same amount of games played. You wanted to talk about Philadelphia.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have too much to add here except for two really positive results for them. The first coming very surprisingly midweek against Seattle, who is what they'd won 9 straight, including the Whitecaps.
Yeah, absolutely.
And who to take them off their lofty space, and I believe at home as well for them, which really must have stung something fierce, was it? Yeah, it was at CenturyLink. And Philly just doing enough and hanging on to get a very crucial 1-0 victory. It didn't seem like there was a ton in this game, really. But we've talked about Philadelphia's staying power and talk about teams that aren't flashy and spend a ton of money on players. Philadelphia, I would argue, really doesn't have a star player on their team in terms of name brand, but my goodness, they've put together a strong case for themselves this season. And then they do the same thing again on the weekend, another quick game against Sporting KC, who we know have wobbled a little bit, because they lost last week, didn't they? Nope, they didn't. They beat the stuffing out of San Jose. They lost a game recently. But we've seen them give up some results, and Philadelphia comes in and beats them 2-0. Which, if you're playing the home game, that puts them now 6 points clear of Montreal, which is a pretty nice position to be in, despite the fact that Montreal is picking up results. What always makes it interesting is that when the person above you in the table is also picking up results. So you've got the same amount of games left, but you're 6 points adrift. At this point, if you're a Montreal Impact fan or a DC United fan, you've got to be thinking, like, please just start losing some games. But if that's happening, you've got to win them. So even if Montreal wins all of the rest of their games, if Philadelphia stays in form, they're only just going to hang on to that last playoff spot, which really then puts DC in a tricky position and New England with 35 points each. They've got points to make up, but the teams above them just don't seem to be giving up anything. And Philadelphia just continues in to show their depth.
Yeah. What was fun about this game in the real sort of issue for Sporting Kansas City as things continue is that even from the very beginning of the game, Philadelphia is exploiting the gaps in the Sporting Kansas City defense.
Oh.
Now you would say at it, last year you would say gaps in the Sporting Kansas City defense, but even if they had lost this game, which it seemed like, you know, if you're looking at, I was looking at the highlights, but it's like, you know, you look at the push and pull in those first 40 minutes or in the first sort of early going of the highlights package. it seems as though, like, you know, there's still a real possibility of that happening until they actually score.
That second goal, too, you can see where SKC's trying to play the offside trap and just got so badly caught out by a beautifully timed run where there's this nice little give and go. And they all just stand there watching. They don't even raise their arms. It's like they can't even believe that they just got beat so badly, all four of them. And then at the last minute, try to run it back as Jay Simpson just calmly slots it past Tim Melia. And so I think that this is, again, one of the things that Philadelphia has become so good at is being a very smart team and being very versatile, but knowing who they're lining up against, knowing how tight that back line likes to keep things and how much they want to play the offside trap is going, yeah, we're not going to get too many chances, but if we can sit right between those center backs, knowing that they're going to play four across, there's a good chance if you time it right, you can beat them. And it's not the fastest back line in the world either. Extremely technically talented, but you can definitely beat them with speed. And Philadelphia, I thought, just executed this one sublimely.
I love this. The key thing, if the goals are late and the goal midweek was in injury time and the two goals here were 71-89, even first off, it still sort of exposes Sporting Kansas City. Hey guys, this is how you do it. But also, they were able to keep pushing so much on the defensive side and wear down the other team and not lose sort of hope by the fact that they hadn't been able to make something happen. The idea that Jay Simpson, who was being spoken about as a player who really has had a lot of a bit of a slump recently, scoring not once but twice.
Yeah,
to get that off his back a little. In that second goal, that second goal comes from a wonderful moment of unselfishness as Alejandro Bedoya takes it on his chest. Both of them are miles behind the back four.
And it's like the back four realizes that they're onside as well. Because again, the arms don't go up. They're not looking to the sideline. They're just standing there in disbelief. Like, what just happened?
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of decision waiting this game. And I have something I noticed about that later. This week. Bedoya chests it down and takes, instead of trying to do something fancy to get him, his back is kind of to the goal, or he's not in a great position to score. But he has, like, 5 minutes, so he could probably get there. But he takes the very easy pass to Simpson. Easy goal. And you can kind of see it as, like, here, buddy.
Yeah.
You need this one.
But also as a complete, it's like they also, it's the soccer equivalent of running around and pulling down everybody's pants. To just, SKC looks so bad in that, because it is just such an easy pass and an easy tap in. But they've got all the time in the world to do it because the defenders haven't stayed with the runs. And so Tim Melia's got acres of space to try to cover. And there's very little as you can do as a goalkeeper when you've got two players that close to you and such a massive net to cover, where he's just like, I'm going to dive one way and try to get there. But this one's in.
It's a 2-on-0, right? Like, what can you do?
Yeah, exactly. It's like,